This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Saturday, April 13th, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. This week marks 45 years since the Taiwan Relations Act, which spells out U.S. commitments to Taiwan. And as Taiwan faces new and mounting pressures, especially from China, it's worth considering those commitments in some detail. Cato's Eric Gomez comments. We've talked about this a few times now. The United States has made certain promises to Taiwan with respect to its security. And if I recall what our colleague Justin Logan has said in the past, it sounds great when you say it out loud, but if you look in detail at what's written on the paper in terms of security, we're not really promising to do very much. And this is strategic, we assume, but what has the United States pledged to do for Taiwan?
The Taiwan Relations Act, which just turned 45 years old, is the legal instrument through which the United States has pledged itself vaguely to Taiwan. And it's this complicated thing that isn't as clear-cut as, say, a security treaty like we have with Japan, right? Where it says, if Japan is attacked, we will come to their aid with military force. The TRA is much more, the Taiwan Relations Act is much more loose about it. It says we have an interest in peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait, an interest in this not being solved by military force. And in order to uphold that interest, we will sell weapons to Taiwan. And we will also, in the event of a Chinese attack on Taiwan, take very unspecified actions or deem it as a problem. It's like a havesies commitment, right? It's like, we care about this. We care about it enough to make it a part of U.S. law. But we're not going to fully commit because then we'd have to not have a relationship with China anymore. And this has been the status quo or the state of play of the U.S. implicit commitment to Taiwan for 45 years.
So are Taiwan and the United States on different pages about what that means?
There have been times when there has been differences. And this is, I think, one of the biggest criticisms of the policy, right? When you have something that is loose, it allows for the different parties to interpret things differently, and those misunderstandings can become a problem. For example, when Taiwan had the Chen Shui-bian administration from 2000 to 2008, he was very pro-independence. He wanted Taiwan to sort of formally be an independent country. China views that as a red line that would cause a war. And the U.S. at the time was saying, like, look, Chen, we don't want you to do this, and sort of reining him back. There have been times when China has been more aggressive towards Taiwan, and we've said, well, we don't like that. We're going to step up our shows of support to Taiwan to try and prevent China from thinking it can do something without cost. So it's a weird thing. I'm being very verbose about trying to explain it because it is so not clear cut. And I think that's very frustrating for a lot of people, right? You either want it to be one thing or the other. But I think that lack of clarity, it hasn't been the worst thing for a while, right? It's kind of helped us have a relationship with the Chinese while also, you know, not completely throwing Taiwan away. But there's increasing questions now about, well, is this viable, right? Can we keep this going another 45 years? And I don't know, right? And I think that question of is the time up, right? Is something need to change one way or the other? I think that's becoming more of an acute question as China and the U.S. get more angry at one another or become more belligerent toward one another.
A new president is being sworn in Taiwan. The elections were a couple months ago. What do we know about this president, and how big does this issue loom for the Taiwanese electorate?
So in the last election, like most elections, domestic and economic issues were the primary things that drew out voters. And what was interesting, too, is that the guy who won, Lai Ching-te, he won not so much because the voters overwhelmingly support him and his political party, the Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, because he only won with, I think, about 40% of the vote. He won because the sort of opposition was split, and you had three candidates in the election. And in the legislature on Taiwan, the DPP doesn't have a majority, right? The opposition party, the KMT, does. So I think for him as the president, right, I think personally he has shown in the past more willingness to be a bit of a firebrand, to be a bit more, you know, beat the drum on the pro-independence language. However, given his sort of lack of a mandate from the Taiwanese people, and given how his predecessor has sort of successfully, I think, you know, not gone too far down that route, I think he'll be fine. The bigger question mark is what happens in the U.S. election, right, with Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, because I think if Biden is elected, we'll see sort of more of the same. And if Trump is elected, I honestly have no idea, because Trump on Taiwan was somewhat all over the place. He would do certain things or say certain things about Taiwan on a Monday that would imply, yeah, like, I support it. And then on a Friday would be like, no, I'm going to not, you know, fighting a war with China over Taiwan is ridiculous. He also sold a bunch of weapons to Taiwan, but didn't deliver them. So I don't know, right? And I don't think the Taiwanese know either, or the Chinese. And so I think that whoever the U.S. president is will have a big implication on how this stuff gets managed. And the sort of frustrating part as an analyst is I can't tell you with any kind of accuracy about Trump, just because he was already kind of all over the place when it came to this issue.
Now, you've said in the past, though, that strategic ambiguity, as these not so clear promises are characterized, not a bad thing.
Right. I think so. So I think if you wanted to make a clean break with Taiwan, if you wanted to say, okay, we're not on the hook anymore for your defense at all, the best time to do it would have been 45 years ago, right? Because China was still very weak then. Taiwan was stronger than China militarily. And the consequences of that break at the time would have been better. Like, the U.S. wasn't entangled with China yet. But now, in the world that we live in, I don't think our choice is between a clear break with Taiwan or, you know, going all in on their commitment, right? I think the choice is between maintaining ambiguity or a stronger U.S. commitment to Taiwan. And if I'm faced with that choice, I think maintaining ambiguity is the better route forward, because a stronger U.S. commitment to Taiwan makes conflict with China, like a war with China, highly likely. But ambiguity, it's still possible, but it's not nearly as certain. And every party has more room to maneuver. So I think that is the better course of action to take now.
In terms of Taiwan's room to maneuver, you said that Taiwan's best friend a while back was the dysfunction in China's military.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that you recommend Taiwan arm up sooner than later, mm-hmm. what's the proper U.S. role in that?
There's a certain set of U.S. action and behavior that China has shown they can live with, right? Stuff that they don't like, but they're not going to start a conflict over it. Arms sales are one of those. They don't like arms sales. I think if we sold Taiwan a narrower menu of things, right? If we only sold Taiwan very defensively oriented, what I call asymmetric, right? So things that, you know, instead of selling them ships to counter Chinese ships, you sell them anti-ship missiles to counter the ships. Instead of selling aircraft, you sell manned aircraft like F-16s, you sell them drones, things like that. I think if you sell them off a narrower menu of options, number one, it's better for Taiwan's self-defense. Number two, if you tell the Chinese, hey, we're limiting ourselves on what we sell the Taiwanese, the Chinese would like that because we've never been willing to limit ourselves before, right? And it's a show of an action we could take to the Chinese to say, listen, we understand that you are pissed off about this, and we're not going to stop it, but we're going to do things that try and make you happier about it. And then finally, I think the big thing we need to do is stop talking so much about it. You know, Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan in 2022. then the Taiwanese president came the next year and met with then Speaker McCarthy. I think those visits were not helpful, right? They pissed off China to no end. They didn't do anything to help Taiwan materially. I think the old Teddy Roosevelt, speak softly, carry a big stick, is a good way forward here. It's like, don't do anything politically provocative, but just keep doing sort of these lower level signs of support that you've been doing for a long time, but do them a bit differently to prioritize different things, different capabilities. I think that's a safe way forward.
Eric Gomez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast, basically anywhere you like. And thank you for listening.